Accession number 28699, Reel 3.
Mr. Casey, Reel 3. You've mentioned there about gentlemen. Presumably, midway through the war, really, getting off of midway through the war, the actual background they were insisting on for officers had changed.
Yes. I know when I applied, I had two interviews, one with three officers, colonel, a couple of colonels, and then one with the colonel on his own. Now, the first lot, I was fairly good at interviews anyway, but I realised you get onto something so that you can talk about it, and that takes up the time, you see. And I mentioned boxing, and one of them was obviously a keen boxer. So I spent about 10 minutes talking about Joe Lewis and Jack Dempsey and Roden. And then, anything else, And I'd practically got through the interview without any problem. Now, when I went before the colonel, I think he was a full colonel on his own. He didn't want to know any of that stuff. You couldn't flannel him. And I remember he had a map with no markings on it, the world. And he asked me where, I think Honolulu was or somewhere, and I put it in the wrong ocean, but it didn't matter. But my pal was failed on that, because one of the colonels asked him, first, what was your rifle for? And he said the official thing was a soldier's personal weapon of defence or something. He said, no, it's to kill bloody Germans with. You see, that was the first thing. And the second one, he said, what would you do with India? And he said, give it back to the Indians. He's out. But then, 3 months or 4 months later, he applied again. And this time, he went on a three-day thing where he had to build bridges to it. Much more sensible. I mean, mine was, if you could flannel, you got in.
You still had people with, upper crust backgrounds with
you? Oh, yes, yes. Very mixed, really. No problems at all. Well, you see, I was lucky. As when I was an officer, I was lucky because I had both worlds. I'd been brought up in Stockton and show business. And, I had mixed with lads who were broad northern lads, tough lads, and I could hold my own. But then I went away to college and I was head boy at public school. And so I'd mixed with the other lot. So I could cope with either. And I found in my career that sometimes people, would ask me to do something because they really didn't know how the other people thought or were. One, when I was training in tanks, there was a major there, and he came up to me and he said, oh, Casey, he said, you understand this Geordie lingo, don't you? I said, oh, yes. He said, well, what the hell's he saying? This was his driver. So I said, what is it? And he said, I was saying, should I fill up the tank? No, or will we get back? I said, well, he wants to know, should you fill the tank up now or wait till he come back? He said, well, why the hell didn't he say so? And I said, he did. I heard him. He said, shall we fill it? No, or wait till he come back? I heard him say it. Oh, God, he said. I said, I tell you, I've just had a funny thought. He said, what? I said, when you're in action and he tells you there's a Tiger tank approaching, you probably think he's talking about the sunset. I should get yourself another driver. So I had these two worlds that I could operate in, you see, which is the same in the BBC. I could operate with the top people, but I also knew, the working lads, how they thought and so on. So I had a very broad education, in other words.
But the fact that you had this background in show business, in the sense your father was well known by then.
Yeah.
Did that have any? Was that of any help to you? Did they know that?
No, not really. It would be known, but it wasn't important then. Except once my father. If you said to my father, you can't get in there, or you can't get them, he would do it to prove you wrong, because he was the greatest con man I've ever met. And we were, before D-Day, we were in Southampton, we weren't allowed out, nobody's allowed in. My father turns up in Southampton, gets the thing, rings up the camp. Well, there's thousands of people, they say. And he said, oh, this is Jimmy James, a comedian. He said, I'm coming to do a concert for the 9th Durham Light Infantry. Can you put me through to their entertainments officer, Lieutenant Casey? So I get this call, you see, and he says, it's your dad. I said, but yeah, well, he said, you're going to have to come out and see me about this concert. So I said, right. So I went and had tea with him about 100 yards down the road. Because nobody's allowed, but he was. It's like when I came back once from Germany, or France, wherever it was, from the war. And he was the only one on the platform. And I said, Dad, he said, just quiet. I said, well, he said, you're under arrest. Just walk beside me. And what he'd done, he wasn't going to stand outside there. He was going to meet me off the train. So he went up to the policeman who was there to stop anybody going on. And he said, Sergeant Casey, Newcastle, he said, now I'll probably be all right, but if I need any help, I'll give you a shout. He said, oh, what is it, son? He said, there's a fella coming off here. He said, he's pretending to be an officer. He said, but we've been after him for a while. He said, there shouldn't be any trouble. He'd be quite calm, I think. But I'll give you a yell if I need you. Oh, right, Sarge. And on he went. And he used to do all these things like that. And I used to say, but what if he said, what's he going to say? Somebody's going to come up to him and tell him, the sergeant, look, he's not going to query that. My mother had to wait. She couldn't come on.
How long did the course last at Sandhurst?
I think the whole thing was about 6 months, I think. 5 months or 6 months. Blackdown and Sandhurst. I can't remember exactly.
Which is pretty concentrated,
I mean. Oh, yes, it was.
Pre-war was longer, yeah. Much longer than that.
It was very concentrated.
How did they... possibly this is a question that... difficult. I was going to say, how did they teach you, if they did teach you, how to relate to men of, you know, other ranks?
Well,
leadership qualities.
I don't think
management is, yes, these days.
Well, I think they. I don't think they really had the answer, not in my sense, where I could talk to the lads like themselves. You see, I mean, a lot of officers I met, who, not the ones who came through the ranks, but the others. They didn't know how the other fellas thought, the ranks. I mean, I can remember one who was a sergeant. I'd been a sergeant major, and he'd have half his stomach shot away, and he'd been commissioned, and it was towards the end, it was just about near the end of the war, and we'd been transferred at the Oxen Bucks. And this fellow was a broad cockney, and he was a hell of a character. Now, the adjutant, who would come straight from Eton, hadn't a clue how to cope with this fella. And I mean, I remember him telling the adjutant, who was supposed to be the discipline man, you know. And I remember saying to the adjutant, you know, he said, you've got lovely childbearing hips, do you know that? And then he had this fantastic expression. When the adjutant started to have a go about the army, you know, what to do, and he said, what are you talking about, son? He said, when you were running around in your knickerbockers, I was shagging from a chandelier in a brothel in Cairo. Well, I fell apart. I just collapsed. And this adjutant just stood there, red face. He had no idea what to do. And he came late from leave from England, this fella. And the adjutant sent for him. And while I was there, and the adjutant said, where have you been? He said, well, not my fault. Not my fault at all. He said, the night before, I was due to come. He said, I went out with the lads down the cut. He said, we had a few dozen beers. And he said, anyway, he'd been in the paratroopers, that was it. He said, anyway, I'm on London Bridge, and I'm deciding to do a parachute jump. Well, this copper comes up, very nice fella, and he arrests me for my own protection. Nice bloke he was, nice lad. So I'm in the nick, you see, and the next morning they let me out. Well, when I got there, I was too late to catch the boat, so I had to catch the next one. He said, but that's not... He said, what are you talking about? He said, it's not my fault. The fact that he was so drunk, he was wanting to jump off London Bridge. See, it didn't even know. And the adjutant just didn't know what to say, how to cope. Because he was talking a language in a world he had never heard of.
come back to Sandhurst. Obviously a different place from the normal type of barracks.
Oh, God, yes, yes.
What was the accommodation?
Well, the accommodation was good. It was still fairly Spartan, but good. And, of course, you could go out and go into cafes and things. And it was very intense when you were doing it, but then, you know, off duty you were able to enjoy yourself a bit.
Did the officer cadets, from your experience of what had gone before, did you get better food than...
Oh, I think so.
That changed?
Yes. Oh, I think the food was certainly better than when I was in the Catrick. Oh, yes. It was, in a way, I suppose, they were kind of... The whole thing was training you to be officers rather than other ranks. So that all went into it, you see.
Did you have distinguishing features on your uniform to show that you were an officer?
You had a white band on the top of each sleeve, that's all. And a white band, I think, on your hat.
And did you wear your regiment, well, corps band, corps badge, sorry, was it an RAC band that you had, a badge, sorry, that you had?
Well, not then. No. I don't think so. I can't remember that. Yes, I suppose we did. Yes, we had the RAC badge, yes. That's right.
And were you tested regularly?
Oh, yes, all the time. All the time. You kept having to pass this and do that and qualify for this, you know. It was very intense. It was much harder than, you know, at Catrick or anywhere.
And presumably those that didn't pass a phase was returned to you?
Well, I suppose so. I don't know. Most of the fellas I knew got through it all right.
Do you remember the name of the colonel that you mentioned that was commanding the...
No. Sergeant Major Brand. That's the only one I remember.
And had you made any friendships whilst you were there?
No, not really. No. You didn't really have time, in a way. I mean, you'd go out to two or three of you together sometimes for a drink or something. Although you couldn't drink too much. But mostly you were just busy. You really were. Run off your feet.
What time would your day start?
Around about 6 something, or 6 o'clock, half past 6, something like that.
And the first things you did when when the Ravali came, what was the first
thing? I think this running out and exercising.
Doing your PT.
Yeah.
And the rest of the morning, what would you be doing?
Well, you'd be doing... Well, you might be... It was a mixture, really. You'd be doing drill, then you'd be doing classes, and then you'd be doing stuff about the tanks, and then you'd be doing some tank work, and then you'd be doing physical training, like, as I say, carry somebody up on your back up a hill, or swim in full gear, and things like that. So it was a mixture all the time.
As part of your training, did they tell you about the Germans and their tactics?
A little bit. It wasn't a great deal of that. I don't think... I mean, they talked about tactics in the sense of how to operate. They didn't say a lot about the Germans' abilities or anything.
Field craft, did that kind of thing come into your training?
Not really.
Because, as I say, you were basically still doing the tank bit, weren't you?
Yes. Yeah. No, there was not a lot of that. One of the things that I did, again, getting out of things, one day a week, Saturday or whatever it was, there used to be a cross-country run, about 4 miles. Right? But you could do other things. So I saw one of the sergeant majors, there seemed to be hundreds of them, and I said, oh, can I do some boxing? You know, any of your instructors? He said, all the instructors box. I said, oh, good. He said, right, report to Sergeant so-and-so. So I report to this sergeant. So instead of running the cross-country run, I'm going to do a boxing. Well, he said, now, you want to learn how to box? I said, no, actually, I know how to box. Oh. I said, I won the Catholic area title. And, oh. So he said, right. And we started up. And I hit him a couple of straight lefts. And he said, just a minute. This is stupid, he said. You know, I said, of course, I've told you. I just wanted to do some boxing. He said, yeah, well, you're not practicing on me. Come on, we'll go up to so-and-so and get a cup of tea. So whenever they did the cross-country run, I used to have my boxing session where we didn't box because I was a better boxer than he was. So That was one good thing I did.
Do you remember how much you were being paid?
Not a clue. I got five bob when I joined up, I remember that. But...
Did you have...
No, wait a minute. I had... There was £2 plus something else. And because there was one of the lads who joined up with me as a recruit. He'd been a farm labourer. And I mean, I was astonished about the money because he said, you know, hey, it's good this, isn't it? And I said, what? Well, he said, you know, I was a farm labourer, you see. Well, I used to have to cycle 7 miles to work. And I got £2 a week. Me and the wife and the two kids. He said, well, now, he said, the wife gets £2.10 on her own. And I get 10 bob for myself. And, you know, it's great. I said, oh, yes. And I thought, bloody hell. £2 a week for farm labourer. And then, you know, I thought, thinking about my father, and I thought, bloody hell. People, the money that people get is terrible, you know.
Did you have kit inspections on a regular basis?
Oh, yes, yes.
What form did that take?
Well, the ordinary, you know, the usual things, everything spread out, and if anything there, be thrown up the air, and, you know.
What happened if anything was missing at all? Was there any stealing in the group?
No, I never came across any. I suppose, you see, there were, when you think of it, there were picked people who went there, so, and they all wanted to succeed, so none of them went out on a limb or did anything. Like I say, if you went to drink, you didn't drink a lot, you know, because you could be kicked out, and you all wanted to be officers. It was very... I thought it was very easy because, as I say, I used to do a lot of training when I was boxing. I mean, we used to have PT, and, you know, you're going at it, and then you pause while you do the next... He explains the next movement. Well, while he was explaining the next movement, I used to run on the spot, knees up, for the minute or half minute, and then I'd do the thing, and I did... So the whole hour, I did that. When I went to Sandhurst, it's a piece of cake. The exercises that they do there. And as I say, I put weight on.
Were there boxing contests in Sandhurst amongst yourselves?
No. No, once you got to be a cadet, you didn't box anymore. Certainly once you were commissioned, you couldn't box.
King's regulations must have been an important element in the training.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. You always reading the things and what you could do, what you couldn't do, and... I think of Catrick. I did once box an officer because he came up, the sergeant major there, and said he wanted a bit of training, you see. Well, I was small. I mean, I fight at 9 stone. And so he thought, well, you know, and then the sergeant major said, well, Casey will have a go with you. You're a bit lighter than you, but it'd be all right, you know. And he said, oh, right. And the sergeant major came over, put the gloves on me, and he said, knock his bloody head off. He said, I'm telling you, because he hated them. But he said, do it carefully. So I only had one round, because I was letting him come in and then jabbing him hard, you know. And so I wasn't sort of swinging to knock him out, but I was hitting him, timing it, so I hit him, and he really jabbed his head back and that, you see. And he said, the other lad, he said, well, thank you, Sergeant. That's good. Thank you very much, sir. And Sergeant said, well, good lad, good lad. But I suppose that's why you didn't box as an officer, because you were hitting at other ranks, or he was hitting you. So I never boxed again. I boxed at, where was it? I don't know whether it was at Sandhurst. There was a boxing thing. I think so. There was... No, it was afterwards, yes. It was afterwards. And so it was an exhibition thing. And I hadn't boxed for a year, you know. And we were drinking quite a bit then, smoking. And they said about put you in it? I said, not likely, I'm not. And then they said, well, this other fella, he'll box you. And I thought, I said, oh, well, I'll box him, yes, he drinks more than I do, yeah. Anyway, they arranged it. And we just had a little spa. And when I got there the next day, the fella running, he said, oh, by the way, so-and-so isn't boxing you, he doesn't want to box you. You're boxing so-and-so. Now, he was a lad about 19. He was about stone heavier. Very, very fit, you know, just coming. So, well, I didn't get knocked out. He hardly hit me, and I hardly hit him. It was pretty awful. And he got the decision. The two judges, one for me, one for him, and the referee said to him, he did most of the leading, you see. And somebody came up to me and said, I was hard looked at. I mean, he's a lot bigger than you, you know, I thought you. And I said, oh, go away. And my pal came up and he said, I'll see you inside. He said, I don't want to talk to you. I said, oh, he said, yeah, he said, that was pathetic. And this other fellow said, he said, what are you talking about? He said, what am I talking about? He said, you should have put him away in 2 minutes. He said, oh, I can't be bothered with you, and walked away. And the fellow said, well, I don't think that's very nice. I said, no, he saw me when I couldn't fight. I said, he's right, I would have put him away in half a round, but I said, I've got no win now, and, you know.
You would get leave from time to time, obviously.
Oh, yes, yes.
And going home, of course.
Yeah, yeah. Well, see, I met my wife, to be, when I was, just before I joined the army, I went and visited a few friends who'd been at school. And one of them was in Liverpool, and I went to stay with him for a few days, you see. And he took me round to another fella's house who had been at school with us, Dennis Hyde. And when I was there, in came Dennis Hyde's sister, who I just was knocked out, you see. This gorgeous girl came in. Oh, my God. So the next day, I said, can we go to Dennis Hyde's again? And then the next thing I knew, this bloke I was with and his sister, and me and Dennis Hyde's sister, we went to Southport on the lakes. And instead of it being what he wanted, like, it was what I wanted. So Joan and I were in a boat. I was rowing her, and he's rowing his sister. And then we went to the cinema, and it was packed. And we're standing at the back. He said, there's two seats. I said, oh, you two go. So he goes and sits with his sister. And by the end of the week, that's it, you see. And she thought I was mad. I said, you probably think I'm crazy, but I'm going to marry you. She said, you're mad. And she was 16, I think, just 17. Just had a 16th birthday, I think. And, so, no, 17th. And so the first leave I got, I went back to their house in Liverpool, stayed at their house with my friend Dennis, his sister. And then I went home after I'd spent 2 days with them. And that was it. And, you know.
What was your father doing? Was he into entertaining troops and so forth?
No, no. He was doing variety, different theatres every week in those days, you know. I mean, he did a lot of for local troops and that, and all that. But he didn't go on like ENSA and things, entertainment.
The troops would be coming to those shows anyway.
Oh, yes. But I mean, the entertainment, ENSA and so on, was all mostly second-rate stuff. There were some others, but
Were they or your mother particularly worried about the fact that you're an officer now and you've got to lead your men into action? Chances
they never really talked about it at all. I mean, my father was very proud, and especially when I was mentioned in dispatches, he was thrilled to bits. And he was proud that I was an officer, you see, because he had been. He'd been a private, a corporal, I think, maybe. My mother, I don't know, she never really commented on it in any way.
Probably kept the worries to herself.
Yeah, I mean, it's like my wife, Joan. She didn't seem to be very worried. I think she just presumed I'd be all right, you know. I don't know.
At the end of the Sandhurst training, did you have the usual big passing out parade?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. And
what are your memories of that?
Well, just like you say it, you know. Everybody drilling like mad, and somebody being presented with a sword and all this, you know.
Was the parents invited to it?
No. At least, they didn't come. I don't think they were. No, I don't think they were. No, I don't think they were in those days, in the war. I don't think they were. And then I went to an RAC regiment, you know.
Do you recall?
154, I think it was. It was just a number, you know. And I was commissioning the tanks for a year. And I was still in England. And then we got this thing that all the officers in our brigade, under 30, were going to be transferred to the infantry.